Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of today's episode, episode 60, I can't believe it's already 60, is Aiden Meany, the creator of Found Surface, a company that creates sustainable fashion entirely made from plastic bottles and organic recycled cotton, a member of the Forbes Cleveland 30 Under 30 list, the wearer of one of the most renowned mustaches, a true staple piece in the area. And I would also be remiss if I didn't congratulate you on your recent celebrations of your engagement.
Thank you.
Aiden Meany, thanks for being here.
One hell of an intro. Thanks.
My first question to you is, what is the best thing that there is to know about you, Aiden?
Wow. That probably I've been doing what I'm working on now for a lot longer than my age would reflect. I think a lot of times as a young founder, a young leader, there's a lot of, you know, folks that might question, you know, experience, and nobody's thought more about t-shirts than me for sure. So
how did you establish that trust? Give us the background.
Yeah. I mean, I've been making clothes since before high school, and initially really not understand the importance of sewing or a craft. And I think as I've gotten older and as our interests have, you know, shifted, I think as a culture and a society, it's been really nice to have something hands-on and just be able to kind of center yourself in a, you know, in a trade and a craft that really gets you connected to the products or sorts of things that you work with every day, like clothes.
Totally. Yeah, they're so important. I mean, literally, it's something that we do every single day, and there's very few things that fall into that category.
Yeah.
Way back, Aiden, what got you into it in the first place?
Yeah, so my grandmother did.
Okay.
She was the one who taught me really how to sew as a skill and as a way to fix things, you know, as a way to mend things and preserve pillowcases and pants and shirts and stuff. And that really didn't interest me early on. It did not. And it took me a couple of years to connect. You know, I kind of was on my own journey of drawing and painting, and I started drawing shoes a lot. I was really into drawing shoes as a kid, and I was like, I'm going to design the LeBron 38s, you know, and like what that's going to be in the future. And then I eventually came, you know, I think at like 14 or so, I connected the dots of, oh, like I know how to sew and I'm drawing these soft good things and put that together. So I started making stuff in my parents' attic, and yeah, one thing led to another, and now we're sitting in what'll be one of the largest t-shirt factories in the whole country.
Now that you've brought it up, let's paint the scene for us. Where are we? Because we're in a unique spot today.
Yeah, we're in our soon-to-be new headquarters of Found Surface. That'll be open in summer of 26. And yeah, it's where we're just going to make good product here in the States for as many people that want to participate making in the USA.
I love that. It's great. We're right in the outskirts of Cleveland. I mean, the river's right to, I guess, behind us. And we're right in a city that needs this, right? It's a city full of opportunity.
Yeah.
How did you establish yourself here so that this could be home?
Well, I'm born and raised, and I'm from Lakewood, and I still live in Lakewood. And I've never been able to go to another city, even if the industry was more established somewhere else, right? Like, in school, I was very interested in going to a New York or going to the West Coast and planting and building something there. But just as you said, there's so much opportunity here. There's a lot of building space and, you know, looking for something interesting to fill it. And there's a lot of people that are hungry to do good work and feel like a part of a community here. So we've got Kent State in Ohio that's got an amazing talent pipeline. And so it just made a lot of sense to end up coming back and, you know, build something here. And it's been, yeah, like really brick by brick and project by project. I started in my dorm room at school and eventually moved back and planted, you know, on the in the art craft building on Superior, and just, you know, one garment at a time.
You mentioned the good work, and you focus primarily on the sustainability facet. You told us about the fashion aspect and learning that, and your grandma and the sewing and all that. How about the sustainability? Where did that come from? How has that emerged as a passion in your life?
I'd say I had a, whatever an before a quarter life crisis would be when I was in college. I was a sophomore when COVID hit in school. And so my very hands-on design concentration and major went fully online. And I started...
It's tough.
Yeah. I started really thinking about, like, what is after this? And there was something about being removed from the hands-on nature of things that got me thinking. It really brought to light how much I crave and need to be a part of the actual making of stuff, not just the conceptual ideation of things. Both are amazing. I need to do both, but mm-hmm. I really need the hands-on aspect. And so I started thinking, like, oh, I need to be involved in product making and manufacturing and development. And I started looking at what those opportunities were post-graduation, and I was like, oh no, like there's nothing. Like, yeah. Most of the places where those opportunities exist, there's no, they don't even have a website. You know, it's a mom and pop, you know, okay. mill that is amazing and like, God bless them. But you know, it's was not easy for me to understand what my options were.
Sure. You weren't the mom nor the pop, so.
Right, yeah.
Where do I fit into this?
And I'm not, yeah, like I'm not part of their family, so it wasn't being, you know, given to me. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting just how spread out and desolate the landscape was. So I started doing just tons of research during my online school, put together a domestic supply chain that could handle a scale of product. And I was working to inform and provide this information to those that needed it, like designers and brands and whatnot. And that was my start, was really just being this kind of made in USA supply chain project manager consultant from my dorm room. Then got to go visit all these folks, learn how they do what they do, make my own product with them, sell that, and now, you know, build each step in the supply chain and making apparel here in Cleveland.
It's incredible. When did you decide that you could transition it into your own business and do it yourself?
I feel like it's always been in me, honestly. Okay. I believe it or not, Found Surface is the same LLC that I started when I was 16.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of nuts.
Yeah, it
so
is.
Changing the name on an LLC is really hard, I found out, because it wasn't the name. I didn't call it Found Surface when I was 16. But
how did you come up with the name? What's the background on that?
Actually, from Ignatius.
Okay.
So I had an art project in high school that was called Found Surface, and it was a found object sculpture project. And I remember just writing it down and putting it on my wallet, and I was like, I don't know what this is or will, you know, evolve into, but I know this means something cool and I know I'm going to pick it up at some point. And, you know, when I was 16, I was like, maybe this is a brand.
Sure.
Kind of a thing. And then during this time on remote Zoom school, I'm like, I'm just doing this found object project in the real life.
Yeah.
Like in, you know, in the actual, you know, middle of America's apparel supply chain crisis. So it's pretty full circle at that point, but
those moments always amaze me when it's almost like you have foresight or that divine inspiration for you to keep that and to know, oh, somewhere down the line, this is going to be pivotal in my life is wild.
We've lost such a connection to how the stuff we participate with every day is done. And so kind of being the team, like Found Surface, being the team of people that is going out and finding the things that we need to live our everyday life and like kind of hold them to light and say like, hey, this is how your shirt is done and here's who makes it and let's reconnect with that is just really, I mean, yeah, it's unimaginable from what I thought was possible when I was making clothes as a 16-year-old and just buying random material and thrifting stuff and seeing how hard it is to just make one of anything. It's been pretty insane how we've been able to scale that and just find like-minded people and organize and just go at it.
Let's dive into it. What makes Found Surface so unique? What sets you guys apart?
A lot of stuff. Yeah. A lot of stuff.
I mean, it's an industry, right, Aiden, that is, industry meaning fashion in and of itself, is so vast. There's so many people in the sector and so many Goliath features.
Yeah.
So how do you guys set yourself apart?
Yeah, we start with material first, so we don't import any materials. We have a really amazing merino yarn program that we work with some folks in Italy and New Zealand, but otherwise, well over 98% of what we make is grown by U.S. farmers. We're working in every step of that supply chain, and that really is the root of the name and our founding, which is just using what's around us and not feeling like, oh, it's hard to find the answer here, so let's just like ship it out wherever and have someone else figure it out. Like, we've spent all our time figuring it out ourselves. A lot of folks think of a factory as being a very transactional, you make my product, you know, I give you money, I get product, sort of a nature of the relationship between brand and maker. And we just come in and do as much as you need us to do. We're your marketing partner, we're your logistics partner, we do fulfillment services, we do sourcing for you. Like, we are here to make making things more sustainably and more traceable an actual reality. Because we understand that there's no one else better positioned to make that possible for a brand than the maker themselves. There's no one else that's gonna make that step for, you know, another brand. It's gotta start from like the cutting room floor, basically.
What a great pitch, too, as a business using you. Who wouldn't want all of that?
Right. It's
like, oh, we get all these features in one spot.
It's funny how it tends to work out, because everyone kind of comes to us and they're hesitant, right? They're like, well, I'm going to be paying a little more because it's made in USA, and they have all these preconceived ideas of what it's going to look like. And yeah, our pitch is really like, give it a shot. We're not asking to make 100,000 unit minimum for you. Give us a shot on something small, and you'll see like why a couple bucks more is really like not even noticeable at the end of the day.
Sure.
Because we have this whole team of people that do everything across this very complicated order of operations. We're often teaching brands way more than they've ever learned in decades of them being a brand. And you can't really put a value on that, because it helps you run your business exponentially better. So, yeah, we do a lot.
In a very short time, Aiden, you guys have scaled to hundreds of thousands in revenue. I mean, it's 2025, I know, started in 21, it seems like.
Yeah.
And over those 4 years, to be able to scale at such a pace is quite impressive. What do you think has expedited that process for you all?
We've said yes to a lot of stuff.
Okay.
We've been very transparent about what we're good at, what we haven't done. But there's truly no way to really get this something like what we're building going without taking some risk and saying yes to stuff that you might have all the tools to do but haven't actually explored yet. So I think that that's really been the driver, is that we're not afraid to try things. And I think that's why a lot of our brands that work with us really love us as their partner, is that a lot of factories are very like, we make this thing, and these are our parameters, and, you know, otherwise, see you later. And so we've been a pretty R&D development heavy partner first, especially this year. We've done a lot of that, where we're just inventing and trying and prototyping stuff out. We're a bunch of young, creative people, so it really is our strength to go be like, why can't we make something out of, you know, why can't we make a sea cell beanie out of, you know, seaweed instead of, you know, nylon or something? And so we're just the partner that will try stuff.
Yeah.
That's been the gut, you know, and I've certainly learned why people don't want to try and build what we're building, right? Like, ton of unknown. You run into so many walls. You're constantly just having to, like, pick yourself back up and be like, all right, here's what I learned. Let's keep going. But that's, like, what everybody who's ever done anything interesting has gone through.
Totally.
Right? So finding a team that gets that and will stand in a line and, you know, go through it together has totally been the reason why we've got to where we are today. It's pretty hard to find team members that are willing to be at that phase of a new startup or new company. It's super special. And, you know, there's really no way to manufacture that.
Yeah.
I guess pun intended, but.
I would love to touch on your team building in a second, but I'm curious, you mentioned that you've taken risks. And I feel like a lot of times in business, we hear owners or people at a certain level wanting to mitigate risk.
Yeah.
How do you balance, okay, this might be too much of a risk, or actually this is more of an adventurous, creative, quote unquote, risk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a, you know, you got to throttle it. It's my role to provide the long-term vision, the energy behind the morale, why we're doing what we're doing. And naturally, you're doing opposite things. You're shooting for the moon, but you're also like putting on your hiking boots, right? At like the same time, you can't do one without the other to actually make good progress. So nobody, I think there's nobody that's got that figured out.
Yeah.
But I think there's just a, like a level of awareness that says like, we are here to do something really big and like will change the whole world and the whole industry. But that's not all we're talking about. We're also talking about, well, you know, we need to re-oil our sewing machine, you know, right now. We're not going to put that off because we're too busy dreaming about, you know, mm-hmm. how amazing what we're going to do is. So I think that with that being said, the idea of risk becomes a lot less scary because you know you're in pursuit of something where whatever's kind of bugging you or the current issue is you're going to like not even remember.
Sure.
They're today's problems, not next year's problems. And as long as you're doing everything else that promotes, you know, a sense of confidence that, yeah, these are today's issues and we just got to get through them, but they're not going to be tomorrow's and they're not going to be a week's, then that's what kind of lets you just not be afraid to have stuff happen.
That's massive. It keeps everyone grounded.
Yeah.
And you're so right that day-to-day tasks are so pivotal in our mm-hmm. quest to shoot for the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're working on a project of such gravity, you've managed to build a team that does believe in, all right, we got to knock out these day-to-day tasks, mm-hmm. and I believe in the shooting for the moon. How did you manage to build that team? How did you find the creatives and the people of the headspace that you need to fulfill that? Collectively. I mean, I say you because you're the figurehead, but
I mean,
for everybody.
I've always wanted to create a place where really talented people could feel like they're doing their life's work. And I don't have any other, you know, mm-hmm. real tactics other than that. Like, we work really hard. It's really challenging. When I bring someone on or I'm interviewing somebody, I'm like, this is going to be like the hardest thing ever. Like, I'm not, you know, not sugarcoating anything. You're going to, like, you can't change the industry without going through some stuff. Like,
sure.
It's not going to be easy. And I think that there's a sense in the fashion industry that, like, it should be. Or that,
fast
like,
fashion, right?
You know, right.
It's
like
quick pops.
But we're not really doing that. Like, we're the step before all that. We're the real difference maker and change maker of what the fashion industry relies on at the end of the day. And so that's how, that was like, I'm sort of going on a tangent, but like that was really how I made the decision to be a factory, was I was starting with this idea of, well, I could just be a really awesome Made in USA brand, have way more fun, you know, focus more on campaigns and photo shoots and product and design and all these things. But I'm like, we got to change this industry. Like, this is the second worst industry on the planet. And people just don't even know how the hell stuff is made. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, we all know, like, you know, oil and gas or whatever the, you know, worst, like, emission industries are. We all, like, are aware of that. People don't, like, understand how bad fashion is in the Mount Rushmore of things that are really hurting our planet and people. And so it's a really big issue that we can do something about. So that's why we made the decision to be a factory and be, like, this foundational partner. That if we set some rules, brands have to play by those rules. And if we set super unattainable, unreasonable expectations or policies, then no brands are going to work with us. So that puts us right in the middle of pulling some levers and figuring this stuff out. So,
yeah. It's right where you need to be, though, because brands working with you, companies working with you, need a backbone. Right. They don't need it to be such a small space that they can't even fit through it.
Exactly. And that's where you're asking, like, how did we attract talent in the team? It's for the people that are fed up with the industry, that have the industry, like, have the, you know, fresh perspective of what could be possible. They might not want to go work for a big brand, but they might have all of the technical design skills to go create apparel. Mm-hmm. But they're like, I don't want to go just, like, shoot that into the machine more and more and more. I want to build a new machine, you know, that someone else could use. Or maybe I'm going to go start my own brand after we get Found Surface going and use it. And I've always thought about that. I'm like, maybe we start a brand after this that, you know, contracts Found Surface. So
that'd be amazing. It's a great idea.
It'll happen for
it
sure.
It will.
It'll, yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully for many of your staff.
It'll happen.
I mean, that'd be awesome, right? Like, all these different brands using what you guys have all built.
Right.
Great.
Right. And that's what's really attracted talent, is, like, it's for everyone that's, like, fed up, you know? It's for everybody who's really just like, are we going to do anything about this? Like, mm-hmm. This is, our door is open to those that really feel, you know, moved by that. So
one of the big things is kind of the lasting nature of a product. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I buy something clothes wise, I want it to last. I don't want the thing to just crumple up in right. two times that I've worn it. Right. How do you guys manage, because you're doing something so creative and really are pioneers in the field, how do you manage to make lasting products that uphold yeah. that quality?
A lot of it's just input. You've got a whole level of, you know, you've got input, you've got craftsmanship. Our input is always real. I mean, we make all of our own yarns and textiles. That's a pretty unheard of foot for a factory to be in terms of, like, you know, trying to do the most. I'd say what we really focus on is for adoption of our product. We've created this private label line of stuff that folks can take and customize. So it's, like, you know, 20 or so common items that brands carry that gives them this, like, easy starting point to start doing their work with us. And we really meticulously design the materials for those products, and that in turn drives what our material library
That's
is.
Great.
So even if you're not working in there, we've got those materials on hand to make whatever you want out of. But it takes years to design really good fabrics and make sure that they're wear tested and that they'll last. I think what I'm really personally more dialed in on is, like, I'm really afraid of what the thrift stores are going to look like in 50 years with all this Shein crap going in it.
That's so true.
And what is so common is that you've got clothes made out of petroleum-based materials, like, you know, like plastic or just, like, polyester or anything, which is most of what that stuff is made out of. And it looks good for a couple washes, and then it looks bad for, like, 1,000 years. It
yeah.
doesn't go away, right?
Yeah.
Nothing that we're wearing needs to live 1,000 years. There's just, like, there's no reason for it. It should last like 100 if you want to pass something down, right?
Right? I think that's
pretty
great.
And it should age and, like, patina gracefully. Like, it should look like the cool vintage Bob Dylan tee you find in a thrift store. That's got some stuff going on with it because it, you know, is, like, old.
Yeah.
So I think that we're building those products, like we're letting there be a mechanism for brands to create those sorts of things again, because we totally wiped it out. And now it's all this stuff that's coming back with, even if it's a blend of whatever, we're not going to have that cool stuff anymore if we don't like fundamentally change it. So again, there's so many of these things that we tap into where we're like, save the thrift stores. Like our kids won't be able to go into a thrift store and get something cool anymore if we don't do this. So I think it's pretty critical. And like I said, our team is really wide. We have a really wide degree of expertise from materials to the actual like making of product. And that's where we just focus on the whole step. Because there's many of them. We don't just kind of say like, well, we're just like, the end goal is make product and just like do it as fast as we can. We're still material developing on our private label stuff. We're constantly getting feedback. We're getting like, surveys. We're wear testing. We all wear our own stuff, you know, in the, our free time. Like we live this and we test it and we really put it. I was telling you, like, I'm always wearing a sweater or something that's kind of like got something wrong with it because I'm like really trying to understand this stuff. We're honest about what we're good at and what we're not so good at yet. And we talk to really experienced people about the stuff we're not good at yet so we can really get good at it. And yeah, eventually, you know, we'll be the number one manufacturer of like all kinds of things. We're definitely this knitwear cotton-based program first. That's our specialty. But every year we want to just take more and more on.
I love that. It's great. I mean, it's so smart to me to look to the experts, but also then taking it and then doing it your way, right? I mean, we all have idols, for lack of a better word, that we look to and try and emulate certain aspects of them and then put that into our own life. I'm curious, Aiden, how does the, because it note, you note on the site, on your site, that you use plastic bottles and then like organic, it's recycled cotton?
How does that even come to be?
Where do you get it?
Yeah, so... I'd say like it's nuts. Like figuring out the next gen of materials to get out of the issues we're currently in is a really fascinating thing that if we had like five more hours, I'd like love to get into it. But like we started early on really trying to understand the viability of recycled bottles as an input. I'd say that our current material programs don't have anything that is made of recycled bottles, but we use it, we're working on using it in the form of what's called waste yarn. And so when you're knitting product down on a knitting machine, there's a chunk of like calibration or like waste yarn at the beginning of whatever you're knitting. So if you're making a sweater, before it actually starts knitting the sweater, there's this sort of like horizontal pass through of like a bunch of waste yarn that can be a different input. It could be whatever you want. And most people make that yarn something super cheap because you throw it, it's waste yarn, right? Like it doesn't, you don't want to make it out of the nice sweater material. Early on, we were doing that. We were making it, that waste yarn, organic cotton, the most expensive stuff, because we were like, we're going to compost this. And that's what we do still today. Is we actually like pay the price for that. We collect it all, and then Rust Belt Riders picks up every Wednesday all of our organic cotton waste and they throw it in the food piles, and like that's the most insane thing ever. What we're working on is creating this kind of infinite recyclable loop of using recycled bottles as that waste yarn, collecting that, and then sending it back to the manufacturer, which is in the Carolinas, and they will actually melt that down and make new yarn out of it and then send it back to us. So that's even better, honestly, because their whole plant is run on steam and solar and it's super clean and these guys are awesome. So that's what we're in the middle of really diving into in terms of how can we use this. The main issue is like if you're putting the plastic bottles in a end product, you still release microplastics. So it's still kind of not a great, still not a good thing overall. It's not like the solution. The solution is right here. Like it's organic natural materials. It's wool and cotton. We can do everything we need out of wool and cotton. but there's a lot of interesting kind of production steps that can be done out of materials that can sort of turn back into themselves and be this like infinite loop. So that's how that's where we're at with recycled bottles.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the end game? What's the end game for Found Surface and for you, Aiden?
I mean, the end game is that we save the thrift stores, we get full traceability back on our products, and people have a palatable way to really understand how clothes get made. If we look back in a decade and say, whoa, consumers know what it takes to make clothes, they're wearing stuff that's made nearby, and people are just thinking, you know, either thinking more about their product or just the options are better, right? Because right now you have to sit back and go, think about the kind of clothes you buy and da-da-da. It's like, well, how about we just have good options? Like,
totally.
You know, why is that our fault? Like, why is that our problem to be like, I got to do all this research and figure out what's good and bad. It's like, it's on the brands. Like, just make the options good. I really think, we were talking about food earlier, connecting this to like different industries and in the food category of things. And I really believe that clothes are so similar to food in that you wear it on your skin. Your skin's your biggest organ. You absorb the stuff that's on your skin. We should, like, success to us is, have we changed the overall understanding of apparel in our bodies, and have brands understood that enough to really, like, start working with us? That's the end goal. The end goal is that we make all the clothes for the whole United States. We're on a mission to do 1% of all contracted apparel manufacturing started in the States but sent overseas. So we want to capture 1% of that by 2030.
Nice.
That's when we start to really be able to make a dent in practices throughout the industry and be able to say, like, wow, we really turned this cruise ship around,
sure.
You know? We're a little speedboat right now that can kind of, like, figure stuff out fast, but the industry is this giant thing. Mm-hmm. And if we just get more and more brands behind us, we'll be able to actually, you know, change stuff. My favorite thing to do is I ask big brands that I'm talking to that we're trying to find ways to work together. I'm like, do you believe we'll make product in the States ever again? Because if the answer is yes, we're the ones that'll do it. That's it.
It's a great, you know, pitch.
Like, there's no one else with the energy to do that, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we're in here.
Yeah.
Because we need it, you know? Meeting, there's so many kind of ends to meet when it comes to apparel. It's a complicated system, complicated partners, expensive steps. It's a lot of hard work, so it's easier said than done, and talk is pretty cheap. But, you know, we've only been around since 2021, so we've been making a lot of headway.
That's it.
By not talking.
It's very long-rooted, and it's such a massive industry like we've talked about. When you dial it back for you personally, who have been some of the biggest inspirations in your life, whether it's people you know well, or whether it's someone that you just kind of look up to, like those quote unquote idols that we mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I think in terms of folks that aren't in my personal life, I've really looked up to Ralph Lauren and the idea of products should have history and heritage. These things should get passed down. All of his work is really like excellent ideals of a brand that would marry very well into what, you know, we're trying to promote here. So I've always growing up, always kind of, and I was told it was Ralph Lauren as a kid, even though it's not, it's Ralph Lauren. So my whole life I've been saying it wrong. And
I was just going to ask you that. And I'm like,
I know it's Ralph Lauren. And I'm like,
is it Lauren or is it Lauren?
No, it's Lauren. He's like, he's from New York. Like, it's, everyone loves to say it's like some thing.
Of course,
it's like, no, he's just like an American dude. Like, it's Ralph Lauren. But, and then Yvonne Chouinard, who's the Patagonia founder.
Okay.
I've read his book several times. And in terms of building a team, attracting talent, trusting your people, making things the right way, and like taking good feedback in, really excellent. Like, wow. Again, person I don't know, but that I followed and drawn a lot of inspiration from. I have a lot of family that I really look up to. I really look up to my dad. in terms of being a hard worker and having a good family life. And as you said, I'm recently engaged, like finding the work-life balance on all of this is not easy to do. Yeah. And having good role models in that regard, I think, has actually done more than any specific like business mentor or lesson I've learned there. It's like everything is holistic, everything is connected. There's no, you know, the more you try to chop things up with your life, like they all start bumping into each other in a certain way, and you've got to look at the whole picture. So,
so true.
That's been my main, it's kind of the wave I'm on right now. It's like, yeah, how is this all not just like work and play or like work and life? It's like, this is my life's mission. I'm going to have to find a way to make all this, you know, come together. So
we're so complex. You know, humans have so many facets to us.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. And I think that when you dive into a project that you really love, it makes it even all the more challenging because you can't just turn this off and be like, ah, I'm clock out.
Yeah.
You can't do that. There's no way.
There's no clock. Yeah, I'm never clocked out.
And so to your point, you can't just compartmentalize, right? So to compare it to someone who's maybe working a job that just pays the bills and they're good with that, they can leave that job and not think about it again until Monday sort of thing, right? But when you're building something and when you're the creative mind behind it, you don't have that luxury. Mm-hmm. So it's like the work and play, if you were to just box it, there's too much friction there. You're going to have resentment for the play because you want to do the work,
exactly,
or resentment for the work because you want to do the play, and that doesn't fly.
Right. And really what it means is like, in a way, you can kind of bring yourself back to, I am clocking in right now. And if you're aware enough to say like, I'm giving my all for whatever tasks are ahead of me, it makes, even if it's sort of metaphorically clocking out, like in my case, that much more necessary and like fills me up so much more to have stuff feel a lot more balanced. So even though I'm always kind of thinking about stuff, I could always get a call at whatever, you know, whatever time. Like if I'm not taking hard moments to stop whatever is going on and just like check in with myself, check in with my family, focus on what is only directly in front of me, that's the biggest thing. I think especially with phones and social media and all these different things that can connect us, it's a beautiful thing, but it also means that you can really only start worrying about stuff that isn't directly in front of you.
Totally.
That's something that young people, I think, really don't have good examples of. We've all gotten kind of like, here's Instagram at 12 years old and no guidance there.
Yeah.
So I think we're really focused on, we as in myself and my family, we're really focused on spending time with no screens, worrying about what's in front of you, just trying to be able to be still and present without worrying about responding to somebody or something like that. Even if it's just for like a short window.
Yeah.
Like I can't do that a lot, right? I got a lot going on, but even just making it a practice is really
100%
been crucial.
Yeah. Gary Vee is real big on that for next year. That's one of the big industries that he's investing in. He's like 2026,
nice.
He's like, that's in his top two, is the industry of people like deplugging. So he thinks that people are going to go to events where, kind of like a Dave Chappelle show, you got to lock your phone away kind of thing.
Yeah.
He thinks that that industry is going to boom because of exactly what you're saying. And he says that people, especially of the youth, are really longing for that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you hit the nail on the head for the reasons why.
I do think our digital tools for communicating are getting so good in like bringing it all together. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like our email is now attached to our CRM, which is now attached to our, you know, MRP, which is attached to our project management thing. And there's all these digital tools that now like have some sort of integration. So it means like you don't have to like go here and then here and then here and then here. You like look at your screen for a little bit when you need it, dive into it, you get everything you need, and then shut it down when it's time to shut it down. You know, it's only like the tech is only getting better to promote that. And I think we're going to do ourselves a great disservice if like we don't take advantage of that.
I updated my phone recently and it was giving me in my maps the routes that I use the most. So it's like, oh, well, this is the fastest, but here's the route that you tend to take the most. And it's the roads that I drive more than I was like, first of all, this is so creepy.
Yeah,
second of all, thank you.
Yeah.
In kind of using that as a metaphor,
yeah.
On the roads that you've been on so far, you guys have had some really rocking collaborations. The Cavs, the Cleveland mm-hmm. Museum of Art, just to name a few that are local to here. Sense Pizza, which yeah. if anyone hasn't had Sense Pizza, definitely check that out if you're in the Cleveland area or visiting. Yeah. Who else do you hope to collaborate with? I mean, it sounds like many. And who's been kind of your favorite collaboration so far?
Anything in Cleveland just hits home.
Okay.
So you definitely nailed it. Cleveland Museum of Art, Cavs, Sense. I love Vince at Sense. He's the best. And he just got to make pizza with Darius Garland.
So awesome.
I'm like, no one texted me about that. No, I saw it. But yeah, I think anything in Cleveland is the you know, close to home is good. It's mm-hmm. easy. I mean, it's easy in the way it should be easy, right? Like, we're making things for Clevelanders by Clevelanders. That's the coolest thing ever.
Totally.
So any chance we can, like, load up the queue with stuff made in Cleveland.
And isn't that the whole goal? If you can't take over here, how are you going to take over everywhere? And that sounds so, like,
it's true, but aggressive. But honestly, there's a really big strategy in terms of bringing a lot of folks in here that would never look Cleveland's way. Yeah. We have a lot of companies we work with that are all over the country. I mean, I was telling you, we got well over 100 or so active projects in motion. Those are all things that, like, 70-80% of them are outside of Cleveland. We're bringing eyes in here, which is really sweet. There's a lot of people I want to work with. I think that we're in the middle of getting them and working on them.
Let's go.
And yeah, we're just going to keep, you know, there's a lot of the industry on the West Coast. There's a decent amount on the East Coast. What's going on in the Midwest? You know, like, mm-hmm. something that has Midwest values too is so different than those two places.
True.
And is so much more honest and so much more relationship focused. So I think that folks are starting to see that throughout the country too, that we just bring a real focus and care about the relationships we have with the clients that we work with. We aren't the fast fashion machine. We're an extension of the businesses we work with. We understand the, like, weight and responsibility to that. And yeah, it's going to be cool to see kind of who bites at that over and over again. We've got an amazing set of clients right now. And I just couldn't be more grateful for those that saw us early and kind of worked with us early, especially folks like the Cavs and Cleveland Museum of Art. Those were two pretty big folks that quickly understood what we're doing, even when we've been able to show, like, 20% of it, you know? Yeah, and it just, rocking. Like, some of those relationships just click, and you can see each other for what you're really after and how that, you know, both of our goals really work well together. And Cavs are a leader in sustainability when it comes to pro sports.
And they do the whole thing with the Metro Parks, too.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of on, it's in so many ways. They do really do a great job with that.
Right. And, like, they're speaking at conferences around the world about how they're incorporating ESG and sustainability into pro sports, like, to other, you know, types of pro sport, too. They're promoting this stuff. And so they need a product partner. That's a huge part of their, like, overall output emissions, you know, waste is, like, merchandise. And so...
We know a guy.
Yeah. Right. Well, and it's just cool because their team, you know, something that we get to do, and if, like I said, it hits even more in Cleveland when it's for a brand or a company in Cleveland, is that the people making the product get to be excited for who they're making it for. When you think of, like, a sweatshop, clearly they're not like, wow, I really love this brand that, like, I'm making product for. Like, they're so cool. They're just like, make 10,000 of this as mm-hmm. fast as you can. You don't get to know who it's for, you know?
Yeah.
And so everyone gets to be like, we're making the Cavs stuff, you know? Like, that's the coolest thing ever, to have a team that
is so cool.
Like you said, we have a lot of different roles and positions. And so the folks that come in every day and do a good day's work and work their ass off, like, get to come in and be like, this is going to go in the Cavs team shop. This is the coolest thing ever. Like, reconnecting to that, you know, product life cycle and who it's for and where it's distributed and where it lands, like, is fulfilling work for young people that I don't know where else you're going to find that.
Right.
You know,
and absolutely.
That's kind of a way. So,
in, to be a creative is taxing in its own way, right? Like we just discussed that you're always on and the mind's always going. And then when you're the guy, when you're the, mm-hmm. the acme of the business, kind of the brains behind it, even more so. Outside of Found Surface, how do you, or what do you do to kind of recharge, if you will? What keeps the mind fresh? What are some of the hobbies that you're into? How do you stay, excuse me, at that peak creative level?
I love cooking, okay. Honestly. I love cooking. I love things that are really the opposite of what I'd call systems building, because that's what I've been doing a lot. You know, I went to school for industrial design. I also think that my background, like my upbringing, has always been Montessori, creative, you know, teaching, and then very discipline forward, private Catholic high school, and then art school, college, that was like focused on very precision-based making of, you know, metalworking and woodworking. So I have this like good duality thing going on of like right brain, left brain, like super specific and precise, but then also like it's really creative and do whatever you want and there's no lines. Lately in building this, it's been so much systems design, so much needing to think really creatively about something that's going to have to be really punctual. Like going really outside of the box to come back to something that's like, this is the rule and this is the way it's done. And so being the person that makes that decision of like, you know, obviously with collaboration in my team, but at the end of the day, it falls on me to be like, that's what we're going with.
Right.
I love just coming home and being like, no recipe, I'm making dinner.
Like,
you know, yeah, just like play around, you know? So I do love like that, really anything that lets me have like an ability to play, mm-hmm. you know, with no consequence. I'm a big paddleboarder too.
Okay.
Love paddleboarding when I can, you know, like the season is pretty much over now. But yeah, I love being outside. I love the water. If I don't get to be near water, I feel like I'm turning into a weird version of myself. So I love being near water.
Like Columbus.
In travel and yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah, you can't go swim really down there, but yeah, it's, you know, I love just spending quality time with folks, and I spend a lot of time with my grandparents. Honestly, I'm like
such a blessing.
Really believe in being near family members, mm-hmm. and especially like your elders, and learning from them and hearing stories. And that's, you know, I'm gonna go most of my life not being able to do that.
Right.
And so I'm pretty aware now of like, that's a big chunk of my time. I'm going to see them tonight, going over for dinner. Spend a lot of good time with my family and just try to be as involved in their life and supportive as possible, especially with my fiance's family too. Like, it's been incredible, you know, joining their family, mm-hmm. and being there for them, and
it's beautiful.
Vice versa. So a lot of quality time. A lot of non-work-based conversations, you know, that really just kind of deepen any sort of personal relationship. My fiance and I also get pretty creative in terms of like painting and drawing and just having like fun, random things to do, you know? So love just like doing that. That's why we're a good match, is that she brings that out in me. Like,
oh, yeah, that's great.
100%. She's absolutely a creative, and yeah, we find ways to just get the stuff in here out on paper, or, you know, out on, you know, whatever medium or format. So, yeah.
I think the most cliche or classic phrase, maybe oldest standing that everyone's familiar with, is that idea of writer's block. Mm. And I think that all of those sorts of hobbies, which is various for everyone, are the reasons or the ways that we get out of that writer's block. Mm. It's like when you're so entrenched in what you're doing, stepping out and just doing other things that you love that maybe aren't directly correlated to that specific thing that quote unquote is experiencing writer's block, are the ways that we kind of keep the creativity flowing, open the passageways in the brain, and really just almost reset.
Yep.
That's really why I asked that to you. And I think that part of the hustle and bustle of how fast life is today takes us away from some of those things that almost slow it down.
Yeah.
And again, get rid of that writer's block.
Totally. I play a lot of basketball too, and
me too.
I end up writing down. I write everything down, no matter how like small or like not thought out it might be. Right? Like I write down a word sometimes that I'm like, there's something here. You know, like I don't wait for a complete thought to mm-hmm. say like this is noteworthy. I often just take a bunch of random notes, and then I always dedicate some time in my schedule to like just go through like the nonsense, you know, drafts of things, and there's always like something there. But most of the time that I write that stuff down, I'm not working on it, you know. I'm shooting around, or I'm in the shower, or I'm, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. Like you do have to like stop trying to figure it out a lot of the time for it to naturally kind of come to. I think sleep is a big thing too. Make sure I get a lot of good sleep. I've always been a sleeper. Like I can fall. So you give me like 30 seconds horizontal and I'm like done no matter where I am. So I think I wake up a lot of times and my brain's in my sleep kind of worked it out and I'm like, oh, I gotta write this down. So yeah.
Kind of in this vein, there's a closing litany that we always run through here at Chats with Clark. And the first question that I have to you is what role gratitude plays in your life. And my contention is that anyone who practices living gratefully and practices a mindset focused on gratitude lives a better life than people who don't.
Yeah, 100%. Especially when you're building something. Because you're like after something that doesn't exist, like trying to make something out of nothing. It's really easy to fall into a trap of like, what I have right now isn't enough, right? I want to build this thing. That means it doesn't exist. I don't have it. I don't have the tools. I don't have this or that. If only I had this, then it would be better. Then it would be here, you know. That becomes really tricky in leadership, because if I'm leading from a place of insecurity or we're not good enough and we're trying to get good enough, or, you know, we got to prove something, like, that'll echo down and kind of create this environment of like, we're constantly doing an uphill battle here. Like, we're never going to get to a place where we can just like come in, do a good day's work, you know, finish wherever we finished. You know, if it wasn't done, that's fine. But like, we close the doors and leave and we had a good day's work and that's it. And it's not like, oh my God, tomorrow is, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's unsettling.
So I really do think that I've learned, you know, gratitude in my personal life, gratitude in a work setting, it echoes through every relationship, right? Like, if I don't find a way to cut off maybe my ability to practice gratitude professionally, then like it bleeds into my personal a little bit too, right? Then I'm like not as present with my partner or whatnot. So I really think that you can find things, you know, you can find ways to practice gratitude kind of at whatever scale and for whatever like lens or focus, whether that's in your personal life or for your career. And you should identify through like a form of meditation, whether that's like whatever's possible for you, right? Mm-hmm. Identify like what the block is or what the reason why maybe you're having a hard time practicing gratitude is, because it's often not something that significant where you can realize it's like, I'm way bigger than this, you know, issue for myself. So it's huge. It's huge.
That monologue is going to be clipped and it'll be out.
I fumbled on it a little bit, but I got there. I was like,
second question, kind of tying off of that. Do you have any regrets in your life? And if so, what have they taught you?
I really like don't walk around with regrets. I do a lot of reflecting, and there are definitely things I reflect on where I'm like, would I do something differently knowing what I know now? Yes, but I don't hold myself like as being like bad or wrong for doing something differently, right?
Sure.
Like, I know hindsight's always, you know, 2020. So it's like, if that's the case, then like why really let it affect your ability to do amazing things going forward? It's kind of the way I look at it. Starting a business, starting the kind of business that we started, you're bound to mess stuff up and make a wrong decision and put time and energy into something that didn't, you know, wasn't worth it. And that's going to impact people and that's going to impact relationships. And all I always come back to is that, like, I know what I'm rooted in is good. I know I'm having a net positive impact on the people in my life and my community. And if there's ever something that happens where I'm not in complete alignment with a partner, a customer, a team member, whatever it is, that it's my hope that I'm always open to any sort of conversation or like sort of a post-mortem, right? Like, what happened? Why are we unhappy? But I think it's always kind of like relationship-based. I don't want to be enemies with anybody. I'm just trying to do good work. Sometimes stuff happens and all I can do is keep an open door and say, hey, I'm what I'm in pursuit of here and I'm just trying to help. So
yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah.
Fair question. Similar to the idea of avoiding or getting out of writer's block, I think that it's important to always have something on our calendars that we're looking forward to. Mm. I think that it breaks us out of our mold and I think it keeps us excited. What's on your calendar coming up that you're looking forward to?
I like this. I've got a family dinner tonight.
Yeah, it's rocking. Love it.
We have a wedding for a really long time friend of mine this weekend.
Oh, nice.
And my partner's a wedding photographer, so we don't really get to go to many weddings where it's not like a work thing.
Sure.
So we're like excited because it's actually our first wedding together as like guests.
Something special about just getting dressed up and experiencing it too.
Right. And it's just like, just you're there to have fun.
Celebrate.
Yeah. Celebrate. So wedding this weekend. Next weekend, we have our second engagement party. And just had one last weekend, and that was amazing. So we get to have our Cleveland engagement party in the following week. I always keep the calendar pretty crazy. Like, I have an event tomorrow for this organization called FITS in Cleveland, which is really cool, trying to, like, uplift the fashion community here in Cleveland.
Nice.
So I got a lot to look forward to all the time.
That's perfect. Yeah. I think it's, again, it keeps things fresh. And when you like people, like you mentioned, that tends to be what happens. You want to be out with people and experiencing the world.
Right. Yeah.
Final question for you, Aiden. What piece of advice would you offer to either a specific sector of the audience or the audience abroad?
I definitely would. I think the opportunity now is best to speak to just young people, kind of my age, right? I'm 24. I've had such a journey in understanding kind of what I'm called to do and where to put my energy, and fought the battle of maintaining like focus. It's so hard to focus on stuff nowadays. And being able to sit down and say, I'm going to invest my time into something that I know might take years to provide what I want for my life, you know, out of it. That all is still very real and exists. And I think that there's a lot of stuff kind of being thrown our way that can make it seem like it's not worth to play a lot, like any sort of long game, which is like totally not true. Like, the long game exists for everybody. It's not going to be glamorous. I mean, it can be, but it's generally not. But if you don't, then you're in a tornado all the time.
Yeah.
And that's like the only thing that we know, no matter what time period in history, still kind of worked out, right? Great Depression era, all these things. I know this because I still, you know, pull it out of my grandparents when they don't want to talk about it, right? I am able to like hear these stories and learn these things on, you know, both of our families, that like no matter how hard things are and how uncertain things can feel, that if you invest in your whole life, not this year, next year, your youth, whatever it is, that you'll end up coming out the other end of something really interesting. And I've seen that by committing to this and committing to my team and committing to this mission of bringing back manufacturing to the United States, even in 4 years, you know, yeah. and hasn't been that long. But just staying focused on T-shirts, you know, has really taught me a lot and done a lot for my life and, you know, found my partner and all these things. So it's there. It's not gone.
Because no one's thought about T-shirts more than you, like you started this episode saying. I think it's so true to believe in the long game. And when someone's building something, it's hard not to, right? You have to believe in the long game and to be able to stay focused. And I think that's such a goal for everyone. So I think you echo great words of wisdom, and our audience can definitely garner something from that.
Awesome.
I know I personally can too.
That's awesome.
Is there any little bit of advice or any last closing thoughts you want to throw out there?
I'm just, you know, super stoked to be building what we're building in Cleveland. It's been a, you know, my life's work. We're just getting started. Anybody that, you know, needs hoodies or t-shirts, we're going to make all of them in here and, you know, come reach out to us and check us out. And
amazing.
We're not as expensive as you think we might be.
It's always a good plus.
That's the way to be.
Right?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to episode 60 of Chats with Clark featuring Aiden Meany of Found Surface. All of the links will be in the description below if you're listening to the podcast, or either in the description or in the pinned comment on YouTube. So definitely check out Aiden's socials, definitely check out Found Surface website and everything great that they have going on here in Cleveland and of course across the nation as well. I'm your host, Joe Clark. If you haven't hit the subscribe button, I really would appreciate you doing so and definitely sharing it with anyone who would gain some value, which is plentiful from this conversation. Thanks for listening. This is another episode of Chats with Clark.